What?
Is it redirecting still? It should not be. It should be. Yeah, there we go. What is it doing? Oh, dodginess. Oh, I should fix it.
What would you have done, yeah? Have you not tested your own website, Trish?
Of course. Isn't this just a tester thing? You don't test your own work. Just everybody else's.
You the first question. In case you had to work on, not started. Why purple box testing?
Well, they had white box testing and grey box testing and black box testing, and I like purple, so I thought purple box testing just seemed like the logical kind of.
And you wanted to know, so what you also managed to do is go and confuse a lot of people. So you're in my Czech Republic, Olivia. Can anybody give me the details of purple box testing?
I saw that and I was surprised that there was actually a response.
So there doesn't yet exist yet. There doesn't exist one as per my knowledge, and I see that people are giving their own definitions for some terminologies which they haven't, which they invent, which doesn't make sense, like this sentence. They are causing much more chaos than there is already much.
There is already much.
So, Trish, you are the bringer of much more chaos when there is already much.
Oh, no! No, I'm all right with that. Unaware of this terminology.
I can't understand why people bother with such terminology. Purple testing, what is this now? There is such... Oh, apparently there is such a kind of IEEE terminology.
Is there? I'm famous. I've coined the phrase purple box test.
So what you've done is you have essentially called your block something, and that's how you get to an IEEE standard.
Yeah.
So you've bypassed standard bodies, you've bypassed everything. This just continues. It's funny. I had a friend called Purple Scarlet. She married into the Box family and was renamed Purple Box. Whatever testing she does is purple box testing.
Wow.
Did you used to be called Scarlet, Trish?
Yeah, that explains everything.
Okay, as one, we only have black box, white box, and grey box. Oh, and clear box. There is no testing called purple box testing.
Ah, there is. If you Google it, you'll find it.
Okay, grey box testing. Blah, 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 blah. And the page...
Can't believe this has gone for 2 pages.
Yeah, it's good. Okay, as per my knowledge...
Oh, good.
This is a testing technique... where a tester doesn't have full knowledge of the internals, but does have some knowledge of the software which is under testing. Now, here we have a long discussion, but the above lines which I have written are based on my theoretical knowledge and not on experience. So please add some comments. Who is working on grey box testing? No, we're talking purple box testing. Yeah. Get on the program. Oh, I don't want to join now.
Read the question.
So that is why it's called purple box testing. But it's not anymore. It's now Trish Middle.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Apparently, purple box testing is exactly the same as grey box testing, and what the IEEE standard says about it.
I don't know.
That'll answer our question.
Always go to the standard. So, I want to introduce ourselves. My name is Bruce McLeod, and I. What was it? Long time call listener, first time. Long time caller, first time listener? No.
Long time listener, first time caller?
Long time tester, first time podcasting about it. So I've been in and around the testing industry for a long, long time as a consultant, and I am now currently working as a tester in a bank. Tester in a bank? A bit more than tester in a bank, but I don't want to go into that. I specifically don't want to mention them by name, just because I am legally forbidden from doing so, and I don't particularly want to talk to the legal department to get approval to use the company's name. So
reasonable.
Yes, yeah, reasonable. Yeah, so... Trish and I have both only Trish introduced herself probably in a second. We met working for a little consultancy called Zectest, and to the first time working as consultants out at Microsoft Solution Development Centre here in Sydney, Australia. Is that about summed up?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Should I introduce myself?
You should.
Okay, I'm Trish Koo, and I don't have nearly as much awesome experience as Bruce. Well, no, it's awesome, it's just not as long.
It's but... See, quality versus quantity. I would argue you have more quality and less quantity.
Well, you said it, not me. So, I work at a company called Campaign Monitor, which is a small-sized Australian company based in Sutherland, which, for those who don't know, is... a little suburb just outside of Sydney.
Yeah. And so Campaign Monitor is email marketing?
Yeah, email marketing software.
You spam, are you?
No. We don't spam. We go out of our way to stop the evil spammers, actually. We're very, very good.
And you've got some pretty big clients on your book.
Yeah, we've got some pretty big clients, I believe, from memorising the front page of our website. There's a few like eBay, Facebook, insert other big names here. So, yeah.
So, another quick question for you, Trish. Have your entire website and team been stolen by another company lately?
Yes! Regularly. Regularly, yes. In one instance, our website does get copied a lot, just because we have a beautiful website design.
Which is www.campaignmonitor.com.
And, in one of the worst copies I've ever seen, they actually picked one of our icons that had a picture of our entire team in it.
And claimed that you actually work for them.
Yes, with the caption, "Meet our team."
Well, you can meet the team, just not working at that company.
That's true. I'm sure you can meet somebody's team.
So your company sort of, WeWork stands out, and it's one of the few places in Australia that actually gives a crap about working employee. So you all have your own offices, and you all play ping pong championships and all that sort of stuff. Whereas most other companies in Australia, it's more just open workspace and...
Oh yeah, we've got a good life there. Everybody gets their own private office where you can close the door and enjoy a quiet time or
luxury.
Yeah, we get a free lunch every single day. Tuesday's Thai Tuesday, which I quite look forward to.
Tuesday.
Yeah, we're starting Sushi Wednesday as well. That's been quite popular.
So just to get back on topic, and the reason why I bring this up is you're actually looking to hire at the moment as well.
Yes. Good segue.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're one tester down, and we need a very good, experienced tester, mainly manual work, but actually if you can do the coding and you want to do some automated testing, then... Yes, more power to you. If you know C#, that's a bonus, but mainly we're just interested in somebody who's very interested in testing, knows what they're doing, and somebody who I can work with and like to get along with.
So that's mandatory or optional?
That's mandatory.
Currently in public beta is the testing brother to Stack Overflow, sqa.stackexchange.com, and I've just happened to have come across one of the questions on that site, which I thought we'd just throw out there to talk about, which is, has automated UI regression testing helped you find critical defects in your system? It's worded a little bit differently on the site itself, but I'll put a link to that in there. So the question is from the user Taryn, I've heard a lot of abuse about automated testing, especially UI automated tests, that it's very fragile and prone to change, especially in agile shops. Personally, my automated tests have given me more confidence about the working system than finding defects. What is your success ratio with automated UI testing, and how do you define success with success? Oh, for fuck's sake. How do you know when your automated tests are successful? That will do. Oh, there's an answer here.
Yeah, you answered it.
Well, I'm not going to talk about myself about it. So, Trish, the question to you is, and I'll summarise, do you find having UI regression testing helpful when it's profiling? Does it find bugs for you, having automated regression testing?
Yes. Actually, I just had to answer this question yesterday as somebody came up to me and said to me, hey, we don't think the automated tests are finding any bugs. We were just thinking of switching them all off. I wasn't really pleased about that. So I said, all right, I'm going to have a look and see what kind of bugs they're finding. And I spent about 15 minutes looking in our suite of about 1,000 plus automated GUI tests and found, well, a crap load of bugs. I listed out the top 7 or so. But I suppose the thing is that usually they're very good at finding environmental bugs, very obvious bugs, and when they do find those kinds of bugs, it tends to obscure some of the smaller regression test bugs. I guess what I'm trying to say is that usually when you write these suites, you're looking to check a lot of very specific things in your regression testing, but more often than not, they're not necessarily the bugs that they end up finding. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. The my take on it is that the regression tests... Now, it's interesting. In your scenario where you've turned them off and you've turned them back on and found bugs almost straight away, how long were they... So have they been off for?
Oh, they hadn't been... They hadn't been turned off yet. They were about to be turned off, and I went, stop, stop! Don't turn them off.
Because what I would generally find... My general opinion is that on a reasonably stable, so not changing, so on a reasonable, on an existing code base, automated tests will find very few bugs. The automated regression testing, by and of themselves, if the code base has been developed and they're running, they actually won't find that many bugs for you. What they will do, though, is free up the time that you would have to spend doing that regression testing to spend that doing exploratory testing and find bugs.
Would you say that it's not finding bugs because the system hasn't actually regressed?
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's it.
Yeah. Okay, in English, yes. Not Bruce speak, yes, in English. Yeah, exactly. So I think the really key thing is that it's about getting to a known place and staying there.
Yeah.
And the regression suite lets you stay there. I suppose the other thing where I've really seen them add a lot of value is one of the projects I've worked on where there was, literally 1,000 automated tests that run every night. A major architectural, for commercial reasons, there was a major architectural change, which I won't go into exactly what or why or who the customer was, but there was a major architectural change, and this was a core change that the entire system had been built around. That was changed for commercial reasons, and the entire system fell apart. Having the automation suite there let them very quickly go, within a week and a half, go from having every single test fail to knowing that the major change that they made, the system was back to where it was 2 weeks ago. So,
yeah.
And that alone pays for it in and of itself.
Yeah, I think automated tests can be used in a lot of different ways. Like, it can be just used as a general red flag to sort of say, wow, there's a heap of tests breaking, something must be hugely wrong, just in a really fast, effective way. And then there's also, like you say, like kind of a reassurance that... that the system hasn't regressed, even when small changes are made.
So one thing which I think is quite dangerous for people that are new to automation, there's the whole silver bullet thing, right?
Yeah.
The name in and of itself is bad, right?
Yeah.
It's not automated. It never is automated. I'm not going to go into recorded playback. That's a whole topic in and of itself. But they think, we can save money by using automation, whereas my line is not that at all. My line is... No, we can do more in the same amount of time with automation.
Yeah, it frees you up to do more valuable testing. I guess the important thing is to make the distinction between checking and exploratory testing. So you can use automation for checking. I've heard people say you can use it for exploratory testing, but in most cases you're really freeing up your time to use your brain, apply it to the system, and explore.
The only way I would think where you could use it for sort of exploratory testing is when your test is very heavily parameterized and you can, like, whether you're doing, say, boundary testing or edge cases, and you can very quickly try 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 100 scenarios by getting Excel out, generating some values and throwing the test and letting it chat away, as opposed to having to do those one. That's been the only situation where I would think, well, it's not in my head, I'm probably wrong.
Yeah, it's very controversial because by some definition, exploratory testing is about learning the system and applying your knowledge to to guide your testing as you go. And if it's a script or a machine that's doing that kind of testing, then how can it learn? You'd have to build in some kind of artificial intelligence.
Potentially. Or you could do...
Which is not impossible.
So one of the other things which I've done in the past is a little thing which I did with one of my automation stacks on my last major project where I was actually hands-on, is I tried to do some semi-automated testing. So what I essentially did is I took my stack, which is C-sharp-based, open source based on one, again, another topic for another show, but and essentially I built a Windows form GUI that could run the automation. So what I would do is, it's if you like, semi-automated. So hence I called it Winchester, as in the rifle.
Right.
And the idea would be that instead of having to manually navigate to a point in the application, I could say, quickly generate me a customer, generate me some products, go, and the automation would take me to the point where it generated some data, did some test generation, generated some data, and got me to that point, which I could then take over
and do
the manual testing.
Yeah,
so it was sort of a way of trying to be inherently lazy, and by that I mean get productivity and not have to waste time by going through 15 screens to get to a point. So click the button, have the automation take me there, and then take it to
poetry stuff. Yeah, I love that kind of automation assisted testing.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been using a bit of that as well, sometimes to that extent, and sometimes just something as simple as just having something that's generating test data for me.
Yeah.
Like I've got something that generates random words and another one that generates an email address that I know will get sent to a test account. And just a few things like that that I've linked up to keyboard shortcuts, and it just makes it all the faster because I don't have to think and type in the right test data as I'm going through the application.
So I think that's another perfect topic, Trish, for another show when we start talking about emails. I think all the people I know, you'll have a ton of experience around testing with email because it's what Campaign Monitor does. So we'll cover that off. So one of the other things that's great about the Stack Exchange site, apart from the fact that I just happen at this point in time to be the number one user on it, is it's finally starting to give a presence and another people, not a presence, another presence for the testing community and starting to build a community. So that's something you've done a lot of work in around that I've seen from places like the Software Testing Club, trying to set up the Sydney meetups. What are some of the challenges in trying to grow and build a testing community?
The main challenge is just finding other testers. I mean, I know they're out there, but because there isn't an existing community, it's a bit of a catch-22, right? Like, if you can't find them, then you can't keep building the community, but then how are you going to build a community if you can't find them? So, developers, designers, they've all got a pretty big online presence already. There's all sorts of developer meetups happening all the time. I just thought it's a bit of a shame that testers don't have the same thing. Like, I've been to testing conferences, and it's always nice to talk to other testers, other people in the field.
Is that is that a vendor-driven thing? Because I know, for example, in the Microsoft space, a lot of their development community is not necessarily driven by, but definitely heavily assisted by the Microsoft. I'm thinking, so user groups, right? So you have the whole Inetta, which is the .NET, a whole worldwide group of, let's build user groups. You have your evangelists that are strong in, and that, yes, while they may not pay for it directly, they'll be there buying pizza and beer and trying to make sure that sort of stuff happens along. Do you think part of it is because that those communities are maybe not necessarily run by, but kickstarted by the vendors themselves?
Well, in that case, why aren't the testing tool vendors out there trying to kickstart some communities?
The HPs and...
Yeah, well, exactly. It's in their best interest, right? So, where are they?
Well, they're not there.
Yeah, but I think it's not just vendor-driven. I mean, you'll see, I guess it's technology-driven in a way, as in specific technologies. People who are interested in those will tend to group together and talk about those, whereas testing is a pretty broad topic, which can involve a wide range of technologies and also techniques, so not just technologies.
Yeah, I suppose, because one thing that I suppose the development communities have in common, there is some commonality. So, for example, if you're it might be .NET or it might be SharePoint. So that's a very narrow... Everyone in the room at the moment wants to write in .NET and they might be using SharePoint or SQL Server.
Right?
So you can pretty much do your little Venn diagram and go, right, cross-section, we're going to get most people, and you have your technical conferences like TechEd where it's just nerd land.
Yeah.
But I suppose from testing, you have everything from your high-level test managers, for want of a better phrase, to your, I'm a manual, I'm just doing manual execution, to I'm a BA, or as I like to refer to them, hobbyist tester. I get in trouble for that all the time, but hey, you know, it's my podcast, I'll say what I like. to your super uber geeky performance testers, to your test automators, to your manual, you know, mum testers. So it's not just this very narrow focus of, you know, I'm just a tester. I suppose you would have that, wouldn't you? You would have the, I'm a tester who's working on GTP.
Yeah, well, you probably would have that, and maybe it's not a bad thing to try to have some groups centered around some specific types of things, like some test automation groups, maybe some kind of exploratory testing groups, people who are interested in that kind of thing. Maybe that's the way to go. I've been trying to organise Sydney tester meetups for the last year or so, and we've had a small group together, but we haven't really been able to grow it, and my friend Anne-Marie Charrett and I have been talking about what we can do to grow those groups.
So Anne-Marie is also known as Maverick Tester.
Yeah.
And her blog is Scoop of Maverick Tester, your fucking brain. I can look it up, but I'll look it up. Let's talk amongst yourself.
Yeah, so how about them trees?
No, it's okay.
Testing dash times something.
Oh, it's testing times.
Yeah, that's her company, so I don't really know what her blog address is based on.
MaverickTester.com.
No, that's easy.
I think, or is it testing
times? Well, that's the one.
MaverickTester.com. Yeah, shit, it was different. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Marie's blog is MaverickTester.com. Interesting, no top-down references there.
Yeah, bit of an oversight. I'll let her know.
You gotta get that top-down references if you're talking about Maverick. Yeah, so is it Rosie Sherry has done a really good job from the software testing blog? And you're...
Yeah, Rosie Sherry, Rob Lambert.
So is that... I haven't not been involved much in that community. Is that mainly an online community, or how does that...?
It started out as an online community, as far as I can see, but recently they've been starting some groups in the real world. I think they started one in London, I may be mistaken.
Yeah.
So that's good to see.
Because the other thing that comes to mind is testing conferences. And I know some of the conferences are more vendor-driven. So I know, for example, one of the bigger conferences in Sydney is the Ignite conference, which is pretty much run by KJ Ross. There is... They did like a test manager thing up in the Gold Coast as well. And I think there is... No, there's... Is it Stans?
Stans, yes.
So I've never... Do you want... What's Stans all about?
Actually, I'll be speaking there later this year.
Okay, so Trish, what is Stans all about?
Stans is touted as the premier software conference in Australia, New Zealand.
Right.
And it's just about...
Oh, software testing in Australia, New Zealand. Oh,
there
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, click, like as
well. Yeah, it's run by SoftEd. So, you know SoftEd?
No.
Yep. What, software, short for software education, run a lot of training courses.
No.
Really?
No.
Probably know if you looked at their website. They send out flyers all the time and everything. Anyway, so it's run by SoftEd, and it's just about a different range of testing topics. They've got a lot of international speakers that they'll bring in. This year they've got Jonathan Cole, Karen Ann Johnson, and a couple of other speakers, which I can't remember off the top of my head.
Is there an American one? American counterpart to that?
Not to my knowledge, there's a lot of different American ones, though.
Because I know there's there's a software testing institute do one, and there's that's sort of the big one, which I think is invite only, is the Google Tesla machine.
There's that one. There's also Cast.
Yeah, Cast is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
So Cast is another big one as well. So, yeah, I think, so again, so what I'm seeing here is the pattern out there is the vendor-driven or company-driven conferences.
Right.
And then there's a big void. So the whole, also the whole, one thing that Microsoft are very good at is building communities around their tools and their technologies. And so they have their tech heads and their PDC, so their tech head, which is normally there. In Australia, it's their primary developer and IT conference, no testing focus. Even though they have testing tools, maybe. Okay, I've just got a pet peeve. This is not at Microsoft, but it's where it manifests itself.
Yeah, spit it out.
Vendors that have some testing as part of their suite, annoys the bejesus out of me when a developer, so they might have some cool testing tool, and then testers go, oh, that's, and then a developer will go, oh, that's our technology. And they'll get some developer or some person who has got nothing to do with testing, but because it's a testing part of a much like, so Visual Studio or whatever, some Visual Studio nerd will go, some developer will say, look at this cool testing feature, and isn't it cool that you can do zero repo, blah, 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 and they actually don't get a tester to talk about the testing toolkit.
Right.
So that's just a pet peeve that I have. It's not just Microsoft, other people do it as well. It's like there's that bridge, I think. So if they have a testing part, that might be one session. And so you're going to go and spend the money and go to an entire developer conference to do one testing session? Probably not.
Yeah.
So there's your conferences, but I think I think you're definitely right. There's a sweet spot that's missing, which is okay, it's not just beers at the pub, but I can't commit to a conference or weekend testing because I do testing 9 to 5, I don't want my weekend not for work. And weeknights are for recording podcasts, apparently. Where there's a sweet spot, I think that the once a month, an hour with the user group type scenario. Once a month, an hour scenario, I think is probably a good thing to do. And if maybe something we should, think about doing.
Exactly. Well, it's an opportunity to just meet other people in your field, maybe learn something. I certainly always learn something every time I talk to another tester.
Except me. Allegedly. Is this some plan that's been concocted now? Are we essentially saying we're putting ourselves on the hook now to build? We are, aren't we?
Pretty much. I already put myself on the hook for it, and Anne-Marie sort of committed to it as well, but now we've brought you in, so...
All right, yes. Okay, so what... All right, here it is. Building a test community in Sydney. If you want to be involved... No, get involved in this. If you're listening to this show, you must care about testing. Therefore, if you're in Sydney, in fact, anywhere, basically get in touch. So you can either follow us or hit us on Twitter. If you want links to get in contact with us, instead of going and reading Twitter handles, if you go to testcast.net, our contact details are all there or going to be there by the time the show goes live. You can either hit us up with some feedback on the site, drop us a line, or hit us up on Twitter and tell us you want to get involved and we'll look at doing something. I'm just thinking about this. You work for a company that does mailing lists, right?
I've been using that for these tester meetups.
Right. So can I hit you up for a bit of mailing lists for the podcast action?
Yeah, of course.
All right, so we'll have a mailing list. So subscribe to the mailing list and I'll let you know what's going on.
FullView is a boutique design studio that fuses creativity with strategy to create effective graphic design for web and print. To find out more about their work and services, go to www.ful-vue.com.
And is my rep going up? Is it bad to be checking your rep whilst you're probably...
How much better can it get? You're already number one.
Oh, look, my rep's gone up by 72 since I last checked. That's funny. And I got two responses. Alright, so back to the podcast. Alright, so there's another question. And we've got 5 hours. Okay, yes. Obviously, no one answer on this as well. Have you heard of parkour?
A what?
Parkour.
Yes.
Alright.
I've used it at the Rapid Software Testing course with James Black.
What is this Rapid Software Testing course? What is this Rapid Software Testing course?
Have you not heard of the Rapid Software Testing course? It's awesome.
No, I haven't heard of the Rapid Software Testing course. Please enlighten me. Actually, okay, all this aside, I've heard of it, but that's all I have. I haven't actually heard much about it. I've obviously done it as a Rapid Software Testing course, and it's delivered by James Park.
I did the Rapid Software Testing course last year. James Park runs it, and so does Michael Bolton.
Yep.
And so I did the one by James Bach when he came to Sydney.
This is not Michael Bolton singer, this is Michael Bolton that works
the tester.
Microsoft. Is he working for Microsoft?
No, he doesn't work for Microsoft, he works for himself.
Right, okay.
I believe.
So this is Michael Bolton the tester, not Michael Bolton the singer.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, so anyway, we're talking about James Bach. So,
Sorry, James.
Yeah, so anyway, it's a 3-day course where James talks about techniques that you can use to surf.
To surf.
Techniques you can use to test software efficiently and rapidly and effectively, and all of those words.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he.
So exploratory testing, or.
Yeah, exploratory testing. A lot of test approach, sort of things. He has a really unique teaching style. I'd go as far as say sort of an aggressive teaching style. I don't think you'd really disagree.
As in, you will learn this content.
Well, it's an interesting way to learn. It's like he'll put you through a series of scenarios and give you a series of challenges. And it's quite a small class. I think there were about 12 people in the class that he taught when I was there. And so he'll go to people individually occasionally and give them a challenge and then they'll have to rise to the challenge and he'll sort of do this thing where he kind of will build you up and tear you down and build you up and tear you down and it's a little exhausting, but my God, my mind was on fire after that course.
So is this a check your ego at the door? Well, I suppose...
Well, not exactly. It's a... You've got to go there willing to do anything to learn.
To find anything.
Willing to do anything to learn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because he... And, how do I say it, really? Yeah, kind of hard to describe.
So, definitely pushes... Tries to push.
Yeah.
You're thinking beyond what you normally would... Your normal limits where you would tend to stop.
Yeah, yeah. He does push you a lot. Like, sort of pushes you to your boundaries, I suppose you could say, but...
There's a bad pun there about boundary testing. Not...
I found it was a really effective way to learn. I really, really got a lot out of that course. I'd recommend it to anybody.
So you mentioned that one of the tools used in the course was ParkCalc.
Yeah.
I love ParkCalc.
Yeah.
So, for those that don't know, ParkCalc is a tool. No, it's not a tool. It's actually a production. See, I'm talking like a tester in a bank.
It's a production.
It's a production system. ParkCalc is a website that is. ParkCalc? What is ParkCalc?
It's a parking calculator.
Yeah, it's a parking calculator. So ParkCalc is a calculator for the Gerald R. Ford Airport in America. So if you Google for ParkCalc, this will come to rise to the top. Now, there's many, many ways that ParkCalc is accidentally brilliant for testers. The first one is it comes complete with the requirements. So there's the page which has the PDF, which essentially is your requirements. It gives you the rates on you're driving in this car park, this particular lot, at this particular time. So it comes with built in with a set of fuzzy requirements, not unlike what normally testers would be given. So that's the step number one. Step number two is it's buggy as heck. How would you describe the levels of bugs that it has?
Bugtastic.
Bugtastic. So it has a large number of bugs, and there's many layers of the subtleties to the bugs. So it's a very, very simple application. So it literally is a, I think, entry time, exit time, and lots.
Different types of parking or something.
Yeah, so it's got different...
It's not client side code, is it? No.
So.
Oh, this is episode code. Of course it is, otherwise I would have just looked up the code.
Yes. Okay. So now you're going to wonder how I've got the code.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I've got. Yeah. It's been reverse engineered. They didn't exactly secure the code.
I was going to ask if your organisation had owned that airport.
No, my organisation. Whilst they do own airports and planes, does not own the Gerald R. Ford, not that I'm aware of. So it's a PHP application. The developer did not, they used, someone did some reverse engineering. If you want to find out, you can Google about it. There's a .incl.incl file, which has all the code, and the server has not been configured to not give up those files. So you can just give it a bit of poke here and there, and the source code comes spewing forth.
I shouldn't be surprised, really.
Okay, straight away. Failed security test #1. Okay, there's no database, so you can't secure. So it's the issue is only a loss of IP of the code issue. So because of that, a number of people, I think, because of that, there is at least one other instance of the application being deployed. I have my own. I'm not going to give my URL. Because I just basically use for my own use. But there are some other versions that have been deployed, so which I recommend, because this obviously is a grey area from should you take someone else's code and run it, which is why I'm not going to get
to
away where it is or all that sort of things. But other people have taken the code and deployed it, so you're not literally running on their site. Anyway, back to PyCalc. It's bugs, and so it's very simple. So it has essentially a lot, entry time, exit time, and the date for each time in, time out, and it gives you back the cost. I'm not going to give away the exact detail of the bugs, because that's part of the charm.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, you have a very simple application, and it's buggy, and you can go and find bugs in it.
Yeah.
So some of the challenges are, what sort of challenges did James run you through in your course with PyCalc? Just go at it and see what you can find, or...?
No, the challenge, I believe the main challenge was to try to get the most expensive parking cost that you possibly could.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and it was surprising. The result was surprising.
I'm not parking in this lot. That's all I'll say. But if this lot actually charges you, or the parking calculator says they're going to charge you...
I don't think anybody has enough money in the world to be able to pay what the highest rate was on that thing.
So there's a whole heap of bugs in it. Definitely worth a look, particularly if you're looking for a way to sharpen up your skills. So you could use it as an interview question.
Yeah.
If people weren't aware of it, you could put them down in front of this thing and go at it. You could use it to clean your teeth. No. The other, so I talked about four things. So the comes with the requirements, it's very simple, full of bugs. The fourth thing is, it's great for automation.
Oh, yeah?
So, how so? So, if you wanted to look at automation approaches, so hypothetically, if you were to bring up a testing stack, I might bring the code up. But what I've actually done is, with my open source testing stack, which is at testingstacks.org, I actually built a demo application using SpecFlow. SpecFlow is a cucumber gherkin based behavior driven design, which I'll talk about in a sec. Front end, so it uses SpecFlow at the front end with all its business logic. So it's a really simple application for you to be able to show this is a full automation stack running. So if you wanted to compare very quickly different tools and techniques for doing automation, you can say, well, this is a behavior-driven design approach, and this is what the test cases look like. This is a record and playback approach, and this is what the test cases look like. So it's a very, if you like, easy way to compare apples with apples.
Yeah, true.
From an automation point of view.
Yeah, it is a very good example app for that kind of thing.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I've used it for. So if when I had to sell my open source automation stack internally and I wanted to do a demo, RCAP is what I would use because it's very quick to respond. You can see lots of action happening very, very quickly and things like that. So it's a great little application for doing that. And if you want to, like, should I do an Excel-based approach or should I do record and playback? It's a great little tool just for giving quick demos, particularly the fact that you can have bugs, you know, passing and failing tests as well.
Yeah.
Because I think the last thing you want to have in an automation demo is, you know, here it is, it's all green.
Yeah.
Right, you want to have some green and some red.
Yeah, that's a good tip, actually. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, you like that one. Okay, so you see, you're recording this podcast, it'll be worthwhile. And so, yeah, there's full, I've got full, which I'll put a URL up on the website, but there's full code there of getting up and running.